going, everybody?
Pretty good.
Welcome.
Welcome.
He's talking to the audience.
I'm talking to everybody.
Oh, okay.
Same is the audience. She listens to the show, Josh.
That's true.
You don't.
That's right, I don't.
And when I say to the show, I mean episode 66 of Cracking the Spine. I'm Sean.
I'm Zane.
I'm Josh.
This is the episode where we kill
all the Jedi,
right?
I knew it. I knew where you were going.
There's nowhere else to go.
That's the best one to go to, yeah.
Because, you know, that's
not all the Jedi.
And it's weird that somehow no one other than the Emperor knew that that was, like, implanted into the clones.
Because he's the Emperor. He's a Sith. He has secrets.
Yeah,
lots of secrets.
He had to, like,
Did you watch the Clone Wars?
Some of them.
Did you watch the animated
Clone Wars?
Watched Clone Wars 2, 4, and 9.
They explain it a little bit. They kind of talk about it.
I'm already bored, and we're a minute into the show.
You asked! You said it's amazing.
I didn't ask at all. I didn't ask at all.
You're like, isn't it amazing?
Oh my god. Sean, what are you reading?
I'm giving up on. I'm making it official on the show this week. I'm giving up on war porn.
Really?
Yeah.
But those are your two favorite things.
I know, right? I so love war, and my God, porn. It's very heavy-handed.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of a modern-day Vonnegut. Mm. And I know everybody out there except me in the world loves Vonnegut.
Yeah, you hate him.
I fucking hate
Kurt
Vonnegut.
Dead now, so.
I mean, I don't hate the man. He probably was very nice to his mother and donated to charities and shit, but
he dropped a lot of bombs on Germany.
It's this idea that because he's writing this stream of consciousness thing, that it's supposed to be good.
Right.
It's not for me.
Okay.
It's not out yet. It won't be out until I think July or August.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it probably could be a thing that other people would really enjoy reading. You're laughing because I don't mean that to be insulting.
No, it's just...
Well...
It's,
I don't mean it to be insulting, is what I said.
Hence the well.
Yep.
It's just not for me.
Okay.
It's very disjointed, and like every once in a while, like a chapter break has just free-form poetry.
Mm.
And
that would turn me off.
There's a lot of military
jargon,
like shorthand in there,
like acronyms.
Exactly. I figured out that BC means base commander.
Okay,
but there's a lot of other things that I have not figured out.
MREs, meals ready to eat.
Right, that's in there too. And I've been reading it for 3 weeks, and
yeah.
It's only a 300-page book. And
oh,
I read 300-page books in 3 weeks. It's not like
You read 300-page books in like 3 days.
Exactly. So it's not...
Don't brag for him.
No, he can.
Sean, I'm his hype man. Yo, Sean reads 300-page books in 3 days!
I got clacks on. It's not bad. It's just not my thing right now. So, but I also read A Gray Man by listener Luke Gelheiser.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Which, again, not my thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because it's a first-time novel or because I'm a dad.
That was the first thought I had when I was reading it. I was like, I kind of almost don't want to give it to Sean.
I don't want
to
give anything
just because
to Sean.
Of the not because I was like Sean won't like this, but because of the subject matter, I can see like it was hard for me to read, and I'm not a parent.
At the risk of giving away his book, and Luke, I'm not going to.
Don't give it away.
I'm not. But it's dark, and it doesn't. It doesn't back down from its darkness.
Yeah, not at all.
And I appreciate that. You know, I'm a fan of American Psycho. I would say to you, Luke, continue to push that envelope. Continue to, you know, don't back away from being dark or ominous or, you know, visceral, graphic. But this particular book, it just wasn't for me. It didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's not saying, you know, it's not bad. It's well written. You know, I the characters were very well defined, and like it was a complete novel.
Yeah.
It just wasn't for me.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah.
It was very brutal.
Yeah.
I say do whatever you want and fuck Whitey. That's my advice.
Dude,
well, it's like a synopsis of the book. Josh, what are you reading?
I haven't read anything this week. I know. At least I'm honest about it. No, I haven't even.
Devil in the White City?
We're there. I mean, I've read lots of things, but not that book. The book that you gave
what
me.
What else did you read?
Book that I gave you. I didn't give you a book.
Zane, I was looking at you, but I meant her.
Well, you should probably use, you know.
The book that you, the you in the room royal gave me. You. The royal you gave me. That's it. Let's move on. Next segment.
Zane, what are you reading?
I'm almost finished. I'm thinking of ending things. Okay. I didn't have a lot of reading time.
Are you thinking of ending it?
It is so good, and I feel so bad that I am not finished this book because it's not fair because I love it.
Interesting.
But I just haven't had time.
I would love to have a conversation with you after it comes out, maybe on the show, about why you love it.
Well, I haven't finished it. Maybe it turns around because you seem skeptical of me liking it.
I didn't love it. I liked it a lot. I thought that there were some things about it that worked.
Too many acronyms.
No, wrong book.
Oh.
All right.
When I came in, Zane was kissing the book, and I was like, should I go?
Wow.
Get a camera or something? What am I doing?
And I was like, Josh, go get a camera, and then you showed up.
Yeah.
If I may throw in as an aside, this week, you guys, I met Grady Hendrix.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so jealous.
Grady Hendrix, for you who are listening who don't remember, was the author of Horror Store. Not was, is. Is.
And he was.
Is the author of Horror Store, which we've been talking about for a long time. It's the horror novel set in like a chain furniture store that's like IKEA. And this week, or I guess last week if you're listening now. Because you're not in the room with us. My Best Friend's Exorcism came out, which I have with me. And Zane, you haven't seen the finished book yet?
No, I haven't.
But check out the way he did the... So I'm showing it to Zane right now. And the inside... So the book is
holy
about...
Crap. I love this.
The book is about a bunch of girls in the 1980s. I'm sorry, not a bunch. Four girls in the 1980s who are going to high school together. And one of them gets possessed by a devil. And the book... that Zane's now looking at and not talking, it's fine, I'm not judging, is laid out much like a Horror Store is laid out like a catalog. It's laid out like a high school yearbook.
Like a yearbook.
And if you flip, she's looking at in the front, there are signatures like, you know, I'm so glad we had class together.
Yeah, we were best friends this year.
But also look here. There's fake ads in the back.
That's awesome.
Oh my god, I love that.
Like your parents took out.
That's cool.
You gave me like the ARC to read, Sean, and like the uncorrected proof, and it was there's a little bit of that in here, but
and it's hinted.
It wasn't like fully formed, obviously, and like the proof that you gave me, and so this is so
that's cool,
exciting.
So I got a chance
looks
to
so good.
I got a chance to meet him this week, and among the questions that I got to ask him were. Would you like to be on the show? And he said he would love to be.
Well, so, what the hell are we doing?
Well, stay tuned for a future episode. He's on tour right now because he's just released a book.
Where is he from?
He's in New York, but he's from South Carolina. But he's
what?
We're gonna Skype him, and we're gonna Skype him on the show eventually.
Oh
this
yeah,
this is beautiful. This book is beautiful, and it was so good too. I loved reading that book.
But I said to him, I was like, you know, Horror Store, you know, the idea that it was laid out like an IKEA catalog, was that your decision? Was that the publisher?
Yeah.
And he was like, no, he goes, I'm a very, I'm detail oriented.
Yeah.
And apparently he used to write copy for catalogs.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
So he was very much involved with the idea that it looked like that.
That's
and
cool.
Another job that he used to have was he used to write the descriptions for movies on Verizon Cable.
Oh, nice.
Oh, cool.
Right? Also, and now I'm gonna bring this out, and I cannot put a picture up of this, but I brought his business card.
Oh, yeah.
If we may have a American Psycho moment about this.
Oh, okay. Let's, yes.
Oh, man.
As we fuss over Grady Hendrix's business card.
Is that one card?
Yeah.
That's one card,
Is it just foam?
It's super thick. It's like half an inch thick.
I would describe the color as bone.
Yeah, bone is a good word.
He handed it to me. I was like, oh my god, is there a watermark? Like, it's
super, dude.
It's super minimalist. Josh is smelling it. It's super minimalist. It
smells like success.
And it's one of those things that, like...
This is fucking
rad. If somebody puts it in your hand, you go, okay, I'm going to remember this guy.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to make a business
like
card
this.
Double that thick.
Okay.
Okay.
So hopefully, future friend of the show, Grady Hendrix.
Dude, that's awesome. That's so, so cool.
It was really nice to meet him. He was a really cool guy. And both of his books you guys should be reading, Horror yes. Store and My Best Friend's Exorcism. Beep, beep, beep. Klaxoned all over.
That's the read klaxon. Means read it.
Sure is. All right, let's take a little break. When we come back, we'll talk.
Welcome back to Cracking the Spine. I am still Josh.
I'm Zane.
Execute Order 66. Yes. I'm Sean.
The Emperor is here. Emperor Palpato.
And Josh would know.
Why would he know?
That's his name.
Why would it be Papleto? Alright, anyway. Papleto. Zane, what are we talking about this week?
Today we are talking about a topic that was submitted via our subreddit by Mr. People 25.
Mr. People 25 is actually the founder of our subreddit. Beep, 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 beep. And I have to apologize to Mr. People 25 because I am so lax in keeping up with that Reddit. Like,
I don't participate as much as I should, but I do read it as much as I lurk.
Just like with everything else on Reddit, I lurk all over the place.
I know'd before you got here. I said, I haven't looked at it in a while, and Zane's like, I know, which means I'm very disappointed in you.
I look at it, I never contribute. And there's some stuff where I feel like, oh man, I should weigh in on that.
There's some stuff where they, like, when they want to talk about, like, the episodes and stuff, it's like, what? Like, I feel weird jumping in and being like, yeah. That thing I said, boy, was that a good point.
So that's true. That's the thing I said. The show speaks for itself, guys. We don't talk off air.
That's right. We're not even friends off air. Who are you people? Whose house are we in?
Anyway, he submitted this topic on our big topic thread. Mm-hmm. He said, big stories versus small stories. Like, do you find it more interesting when it's the fate of the world, galaxy, whatever huge thing?
Oh, is that what he meant?
When it's just the fate of the main character.
Did you not even read the text messages we were doing about this, dude?
I glanced at them. No, I thought it meant like he meant like long versus short. Oh. That's what I thought.
I read Zane exactly what we were talking about to talk about.
Okay,
this.
Well, I got opinions about all kinds of stuff.
I do sometimes like abbreviate. I don't usually cut.
I blame Zane because
no, don't blame Zane. It's not Zane's fault.
Zane doesn't get a lot of blame for stuff, so she's getting.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I never get blamed for anything.
Zane is usually the one in this show that never gets shit on. That's usually the way it works around here.
Josh hates me.
I would say right off the bat, in answer to your question, Mr. People, I think that there is room in the world for both, and that sounds like a cop-out. But I also think...
That sounds like a real Zane kind of answer.
Someone's being a real Zane tonight.
Here's the thing, okay? If I may Zane it up a little more.
It's like Smurf. Could you please ex-Zane what your answer is?
Most stories, even if it seems to you like they are... And I have to say,
I know what you're going to say, and I love it already.
I gave this a lot of thought. Even if these stories seem like they are large scale world things that are going on, with very few exceptions, they always delve into a smaller version of it. Mm-hmm. And the three that I'm thinking of right off the top of my head, and at the risk of being redundant, The Stand by Stephen King. Mm-hmm. The Fireman by Joe Hill, and 7 Eves by Neal Stephenson. So all of them are about the end of the world.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry, there's another one. There's a fourth one. World War Z.
Okay.
They're all about huge apocalyptic issues that threaten to destroy the world. Mm-hmm. And for, I think, most of them actually do destroy the world.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Things get pretty bad in that one.
But they're all out. I mean, I'm not spoiling anything that you haven't had a chance to read. But what happens is, the beginning of all of those novels sets up this scenario in which the world is threatened,
yeah,
or the world is ending. But then what happens is, in order to make it relatable to an audience, there's like a microscope put in on one element or one,
yeah,
faction of humanity that you focus on,
right,
for the narrative that explains how the wider view,
right,
affects the individual.
Right.
That's me.
That's kind of interesting because I kind of took a like the opposite approach to this.
You're gonna say what I'm gonna say.
Which is like obviously, you know, I'm Zane. I appreciate both kinds.
Wait,
of
you're
stories.
Zane?
But I really like when you read a story about a very small world or a very small corner of the world or whatever. Like a slice of life kind of thing, no matter what context it's in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the way that it's written, it makes it feel like the stakes are very, very high, even just within the context of that world. So like the first one that came to mind was Syrup by Max Berry.
Okay.
Because like, here's something like the fate of the world does not hinge on any of the goings on, you know, and even though like it is, you know, he's like they're working for Coca-Cola and stuff like, and that's big and it's, you know, global. It's really about these two characters working together and like their high stakes game, in their like personal,
yeah,
life. And the way that book is written, you're very invested and it's sort of like, is this going to work? Are they going to get this launched? Are they going to do this? Are they going to see it to completion? And it's so like, you're so invested in it because the stakes are so high. But it's very small. Like it's just this one little section of the world. And the other one that I thought of was, like, a lot of horror books are good at this as well. Like, A Head Full of Ghosts.
Right.
Where it's, like, just
right,
the goings-on in this little family. But the stakes are very, very high. And I love books like that, where it is, it's a small little corner of the world. There's maybe even a very small cast of characters. But the way that it's written, they're so well written that you get incredibly invested.
Well,
it feels high risk.
I think The Head Full of Ghosts is really indicative of what you're underlining, Zane, because it's told through the point of view of the little sister,
yeah,
in that family. And she is, it is her whole world.
Yes.
You know, it's, if you're reading it as an adult, it's a very, like, it's a very small, personal kind of story.
But to her,
to the narrator,
yeah,
of the story, it's her whole world. It's her parents, and her parents, you know, are fighting, and it's her sister, and her sister is sick.
Yeah.
And it's the home that she knows as everything.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, I think that it's the question, and I don't want to hedge again like we did last week, but here I go. The question of big versus small is kind of
fluid.
Yeah,
yeah.
Thank you, Josh. Exactly.
It's I think, like, for me, we definitely live in the popular culture era of big.
Yeah.
And I think that gets very old.
Mm-hmm.
And I always
explain what you mean by the popular culture. I think
films,
I know what you mean. Yeah,
movies,
okay.
Marvel,
yeah,
movies, everything. There's a wormhole in the sky. Aliens,
yeah,
are gonna blow up the world.
Okay,
whatever.
That's what I thought you meant. But
yeah,
I wanted to. Okay,
there are very few, like, here's a, like, just a story about a superhero being a guy. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
So I always tend
the stakes
to,
are always,
it's always, they're jacked. They're even more jacked sometimes. Like sometimes it's like other planets and whatever, like Star Trek crap. You know.
Right.
But like, I always find that, like, what you were saying, Zane, like, stories about, like, one person are exactly the same, like, what you said, Sean, that, like, they're, like, a window to the bigger picture. They're a window to something about humanity.
Right.
Not maybe the world, but something,
yeah,
about the human.
No, the condition.
The human condition, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I always like when it's told from that point of view a little more, but I think I'm just a product of the incessant world is ending, like, we're like obsessed with that now.
Well, and it's sometimes it does feel like, as someone who enjoys reading young adult fiction and stuff, like, especially lately, everything that comes out, it's like, well, here's a story about like a small group of kids,
mm-hmm,
But all of a sudden, the world's in trouble.
Yeah, they're the anointed ones.
It's starting to feel very, like, shoehorned in there. It's not that I don't like stories that take place on a global scale where the stakes are so high, but it's starting to feel like this could be a little slice of life type thing, and wouldn't it be interesting to read a book that's set in, like, a dystopian future where it's just a little corner of that world? That would be great. Yeah. But instead, it's like... But actually, the protagonist is, like, probably the savior of the universe.
Yeah,
it's like, oh,
probably
boy.
Jesus, yeah.
Well, so that book I read, I talked about it on the show, and it hasn't gotten much play in mainstream, just, like, literary talk, is that book Thirst, that was about...
Thoist.
thank you. Thank you for getting there for the Brooklyn audience.
Hey, man. Know your audience.
That was about, you know... seemingly about land water drying up and what it means to one family that they don't have water. And, you know, we talked about it on the show, that usually that turns into the road or the stand.
Yeah.
Or it go, like, the narrative has to set out to find why it happened, how to fix it.
Right.
But that's not what the book was about.
Right.
The book was not about why it happened or how to fix it. The book was about what happens if you're in your house and your neighbors, you don't know your neighbors very well, and there's no water.
Yeah.
It's a realist point of view of what would happen if that really happened.
And like, and it's, you know, again, it's that, like, that there's a butting against point, like a head butting point of big picture versus little picture. You know, I can't... When I started reading The Fireman by Joe Hill, which is out now, and I'm not going to give a lot away about it, but in the beginning of the book, you get this impression that it's going to be the story of the end of the world.
Right.
You know, there's this plague of fire that is set out very early in the novel that is affecting a lot of people. And then what happens is, less than a quarter of the way through the book, it gets very laser pointed down through one character's point of view.
Yeah.
And how she deals with her world. And then, you know, a lot of things happen to her, and then it sort of spreads back out again.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that, like, you know, I don't know that there's one better or worse, or one that I prefer more than the other.
No.
Like, each one stands on its own
merit. It's a mood. For me, it's a mood thing. Like, so I love watching or reading, like, big stories about crazy, you know, like, end of the world, post-apocalyptic stuff. Like, that's fun to do. But, like, even when I was reading The Fold, I was like, this is great. Because, like, this is just, like, a random secret scientist lab where they're making portals and stuff.
Right.
And, like, at some point, I got a little bit, like, turned off when they were like, well, the whole, is it out yet? Can I talk about it?
Yeah, it's been out for a while, yeah.
So, like, at some point, like, the wormhole or whatever, like, expands and it threatens the whole world. And I was like, oh, come on.
Right.
Like, it's not scary enough just to be like, we have to deal with this right here. And I think it's because people have a hard time, like, especially in fiction, like, when you're faced with, like, a problem you've created, like, a big problem like that, like a plague, zombies.
Now, when you say people, do you mean authors or
audience? Authors.
Yes. Okay.
When authors make up, like, a big not a big problem, a problem that's weird or not real.
Right.
Like, something that, how would you react as a real person to this problem? It's really difficult for them to say, oh, it would just be a problem in this instance, not a global issue.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, we've all been cut. You know, I don't want to say post 9/11 because it certainly existed before that.
Yeah.
But we've all become so, like, conditioned to everything is a catastrophe.
Everything
is
terrible.
A global.
Yeah.
Everything that happens in the world is breaking news.
Yeah, breaking news.
Why did you laugh when I said post
9/11? It was just funny. Like, the way it got, like,
because it was an inside job.
The way that we, like, brought up 9/11 was just funny to me. I'm sorry.
Well, no,
Zane,
I think
are you laughing at 9/11?
I think there's something to be said for
it's
the fact.
It's just funny. It wasn't where I saw, like the conversation going, and it was just,
oh really? Because
I am with you, man. I'm one.
No, I get it. It's Zane's not, really I'm zaning sorry, it up I'm right sorry. Now. It's not that it's a bad point or that it's irrelevant. It's not at all. It was just funny to me. I was like, oh, we're talking about 9/11. That's why I laughed.
This is something that has come up on the show before.
No, and I think
that like we used to think about the future, you know, as an optimistic thing.
Yeah,
and I don't want to say recently, and I don't want to say it's been since 9/11, but I think
I'll say that. I'll definitely go on. I'll say that.
Well, I think it's been since global warming.
I actually think that there might be some merit to that because it's, you know, Josh was just saying that there's this sort of overwhelming, like majority of movies now that everything is, oh my God, it's doom. The end of the world. It's doom. Yeah. Like, what are we going to do? We all have to pull together. And after, you know, there's been so many global events like that in recent history.
Like what?
She's
not going
to say
it. 9/11.
Exposed to 9/11 cover-up.
Burning books cannot melt still beans.
No, but, you know, like, it's that kind of stuff when you... That's all you see in current events, and when you know stuff like that happens,
people are just
you start to feel like
it.
Even when stuff happens overseas, like it's a global event and it affects you,
right?
No matter where you live, so you know that kind of feeling leaks into our popular media,
right? Like
it's
you definitely have a really good point there. I'm sorry, I laughed.
No, it's fine. You guys haven't seen the new Captain America, right?
No.
Civil War.
No, I haven't,
and I haven't either. But I have seen several headlines of articles that the new Captain America has broken ground in the superhero genre because it doesn't the storyline does not involve the potential end of the world. That somehow like I'm supposed to be impressed that this movie is so great because it has superheroes, but it doesn't threaten existence as
right.
we know it.
But that's not
how
even
else
true.
Do you tell a superhero story?
Right, exactly, yeah. And go back, you know, not to sound like Old Man Curran, but Old Man Curran's going to come out for a minute. Like, go back and watch Tim Burton's Batman.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The Joker
it's
didn't
just a
threaten
guy, yeah.
society. He didn't threaten the world.
Go watch the Joker, the Christopher Nolan Joker Batman movie. Like, he's not like... The world's coming to an end. He's like, I'm going to just kill a bunch of people.
Right, but like somehow Marvel has convinced us, and then DC with Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman has told us that like the stakes are always, always...
Super high.
Everything. Yeah. It's always our way of life is being threatened.
But look, I'm going to push my nerd glasses up for a second, because I do know about like the comic book Civil War, and I'm assuming that's... what this movie is about, because it's called that.
One would think.
But the movie is about a global event. It's about a global event of superheroes, and in the comic book, superheroes and mutants. That's a global event. That's the whole world. There's
I think the point that
it's not destructive.
That it's not it's not Thanos coming down
but
from...
But that's where it's going, though.
No, I know. They're all going... You know, there's no reason why Marvel would announce every movie for the next 6 years in advance unless they're just laying pieces to get you there. But it's this idea that, like, somehow I'm supposed to think that because the story isn't the end of the world, that somehow it's groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Well, and I was thinking earlier when Josh was talking that this, so much of what we're talking about...
I think a lot
about,
while Josh is talking, too.
Oh, I'll take that as a compliment.
So much of what we're talking about hinges on the quality of writing.
Right.
Like, you know, whether you're telling a big picture, like, end of the world, end of the galaxy type story, and you sort of narrow it down to be about a small group of people coping in that, like, that's good storytelling, because you can't just care about the entire world.
Right.
Like, that's harder. As a storyteller, you have to, like... You know,
you have to,
like, parcel it out a little bit. Like, here is someone through which you can experience what's going on.
Empire Strikes Back.
2012.
Vice versa, you know, writing a very small story that takes place in a very small universe where the stakes aren't global, but making them seem through, like, the art of storytelling, like, this is really important. Like, these are really critical events, and you're very invested in how the story turns out. Like, that's, it comes down to good writing. Like,
Serenity. I mean, Serenity, to me, is the one where it's like, you know, the stakes are the universe and the galaxy, But the story is those eight people that are on the ship with Captain Malcolm Reynolds. It's about people. It's about eight individuals who happen to be caught up in a plot that involves the universe.
Right.
Yeah. And that's how I feel about like the ones I mentioned earlier, like The Stand or The Fireman or World War Z. Like World War Z is told in journal entries.
Right.
And like writings. But it comes back to the same people over and over again. And that's not the film. I'll talk about the film, just the book.
Yeah, the book, yeah. The book's way better than the movie.
Well, it goes without saying.
In that case, it really goes.
And Seven Eves. Like Seven Eves is, you know, about the end of the world, and then the narrative moves 4,000 years forward after most of humanity is wiped out, and what happens as a result. And it's only successful because it's about people. Yeah. You know, it's not about ideas. It's not about the world.
Right.
It's about individuals.
Yeah, I mean, I can spend a million years talking about this because I have a whole, like, theory about, like, why people like fantasy films, too.
Go ahead.
Because...
I mean, I don't have a million years worth of data, but...
Because I think... I'll try to keep it abbreviated. I think that you can... It's a cheat. It's like a cheat, right? You can have the stakes be big.
Right.
And the whole world can be destroyed, but you yourself are new to that world. You don't live in that world, so you're like an outsider.
Right.
Like you're actually in, like in a sense, like a D&D sense. You're like in that world trying to save it, but you're not from it. So it's sort of
it's not as scary as like a story about like current events bringing us to an end.
Actually, when you Zane, when you mentioned earlier, syrup. In my brain, I made the connection to The Lord of the Rings.
Uh-huh.
The idea, like, that the hobbits of the Lord of the Rings universe are the neophytes to a much larger world and fight and stakes game than you know, they even realize, then they realize even two books into it.
Yeah.
And you, as the reader... are the hobbits.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Like, you know, you don't realize until you're like halfway through the second book that like you're talking about the destruction of everything.
Yeah.
Right.
But the hobbits are really just worried about second breakfasts.
Yeah, they're just like, they're naive and that's kind of fun, right? Yeah. It's fun to be like that outsider who's like,
even
I don't
after
know what
everything
this is.
It's like, what about Hobbiton?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know, like we have to go back and make sure Hobbiton made it through.
And be real bored cuz Hobbiton is boring.
Whoa, that is a death stare.
Dude,
Sean just fixed Josh with.
Bilbo, I love Bilbo because Bilbo is like, this place sucks. And I agree. If I were Bilbo, I'd be like, those elves told me I could go live at Elftown. I would go live there forever.
You just don't get it, man. You just don't get it.
Look, I want to sit around eating squashes and pumpkins and smoking pipe weed and drinking mead and shit. That sounds great. But you know what? I also want to go out and fight with a sword and kill some orcs.
Yeah, I'd rather the first parts and not the last parts.
I would rather the last parts because they got treasure. And I want that gold, bitch.
This is a really strange argument.
Zane buried her head in her hands right there.
That tends to
which
happen.
Leads me to believe that I think we've actually had a really good...
Again, I don't think there's an answer. I don't think that there...
I don't think he was looking for an answer, to be honest with you.
Well, these are just discussion topics. I don't think anyone's looking for, like, concrete...
They want us to tell them what to think.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Why they listen.
What was his name? Mr. People?
Mr. People's
yeah, Mr.
25.
Mr. People 25. The answer is... both. Josh, what do you say?
I'm going to go with the answer is both.
Zane?
9.
Whoa! 11.
She's getting all German on us. We'll take a break. We'll be right back because we got some more shit to talk about. I'm Sean.
I'm still Josh, and I'm here.
And I'm here too. And I have a story that I want to relate to you guys.
Go on.
Yes.
About a thing that happened to me this week.
I love it. I know what it is.
Well, I've told you guys. And
no, you didn't tell me.
Well, you saw it.
You saw it on
You know what it is.
You saw it on the Facebook.
Oh, okay.
So I was at the local public library on a weekday this week.
Or book grocery.
Okay. And I was talking to people, as I'm wont to do. I'm a talker. I'm the kind of guy that if you're in public with me, I'm going
to
talk to you.
Yeah, you talk to a lot of people. It's really weird.
I'm super sociable, man. I love talking to people.
You're like a normal human being. How's that like?
It's hard to say.
I'm sorry. Go on.
So I was talking. What happened was, like, I was talking to let's call her Anne. I don't know anybody's name. So I'm talking to Anne. And Anne's daughter is a little bit older than my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And Anne and I were talking about how it's weird that the school district where we send our children only offer half-day kindergarten.
Yeah.
Because the teachers and a lot of education professionals suggest that full-day kindergarten is more advantageous, better for learning, provides more opportunity for play.
Mm-hmm.
And in our particular school district, already a lot of testing going on in kindergarten.
What?
No, I know, exactly. So
what?
When they're only doing 2.5 hours a day, you know, a lot of time is spent getting them ready for the tests
mm-hmm.
in kindergarten. So Anne and I are having this discussion. So then another lady comes in. Let's call her Ava Braun.
Ooh.
So Ava Braun comes in.
I feel like that's a weighted name. Like maybe you named her that way.
No, I just picked the name.
Just randomly.
Just picked it out of a hat. Seems random.
So Ava Braun comes in and she says, you know, oh, hey, I couldn't help but overhear you talking. Where do you send your child to school? And I said, oh, she goes to, you know, school X. And
Eleanor Roosevelt Elementary.
Sure, that one. And I was like, where does your child go? And she's like, oh, school Y, but it's the same school district.
Yeah.
And I've had those issues with, you know, the half-day kindergarten, too. Oh, great. Yeah, fine. Is your child still in kindergarten? Asks Sean. And Ava Braun's like, no, she's in second grade now.
Uh-huh.
But I know you're concerned about half-day kindergarten. And I said, well, yeah, and, you know, and because this is the person I am. I was like, I've sent letters to the school board and to the superintendent expressing my concern. And she was like, oh, I send a lot of letters to my school board, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. And I didn't even ask. And she was like, so for, you know, for example, my daughter, Ava Braun's daughter, brought home a Roald Dahl book from the school library the other day. And it was Boy, Tales of Childhood.
Yeah.
And I, you know, that's an adult book. And it's dark. And it's... It's depressing, and it has no place in a school library. So I wrote to the principal and told him that it should be removed. And I sat there in stunned silence because I was having a conversation with a parent who was advocating removing a book from a public school library.
Yeah.
And if you've listened to anything I've ever said on this show, you know that usually my reaction to that would be... militant.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's like a real crazy I don't even know well, how to like stuff, wrap like,
we,
my head around
we
that.
Have an entire episode about censorship
right
yeah
and like book banning but like you start pulling books out basically like at will, like just like no, this one's gone like where do you stop?
I'm going to get out of my soapbox for a second.
What is the one book that's like totally okay in that library?
I like how she wants to ban the book because it's depressing. That's one of my favorite things. It'll make my child feel icky inside for a second.
Yeah, because second graders have never felt depressed or icky.
They should live in a lollipop trolley land where...
Well, they also shouldn't... They shouldn't have any kind of experience with reading... things that other people feel, or, you know, like, oh, wow, other people sometimes feel
that. Why
don't
we just give them pills and make them happy all day long?
Well,
why
we do.
Don't we?
But the thing that really gets, the thing, that, to me, the thing that I'm really upset that I didn't say to her, that I, there's a lot of things that I wish I had said to her.
I would have lost my mind.
But I wasn't, the thing is, it wasn't the time or the place. I was there with my infant son, he's not an infant, he's a toddler, but like, I was, like, it wasn't.
He's got brass knuckles, he's cool.
It wasn't the time or the place I thought at the time, but now that I've had, like, time to think about it and, like, brood over it, the thing that I really wanted to say to her was, like, why is it the job of the school to remove something from your child's purview from every child's purview, because you can't have a conversation with your child that says, mm-hmm. don't bring home these kinds of books. We don't read them in this house. I don't agree with that sentiment.
Right, but if that's the way you're absolutely incapable of changing that feeling for some reason, that's your responsibility as a parent to say,
exactly.
That's how we do things. Again, even though I think that's insane too, because it's a fucking book.
Yeah, but like you're fully within your own power to do sure. that. Like, you know, it's monitor not... your own children's reading habits however you choose, I suppose. Sure. But like to monitor the entire school's reading habits because you don't like your child reading that particular book is bullshit.
To not be able to say to your child, why did you pick this book?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you thought this book was going to be about. Like, to not have a conversation with your kid where you express to your kid why it was a problem is completely alien to me. Right. And my kid's only in kindergarten. Yeah. Like, I don't want to say that I'm a better parent than Ava Braun.
I'll say it.
But you're definitely no a better doubt parent than Ava that Braun. I'm a better parent than Ava Braun. Like, you know, I didn't marry Hitler. I married...
Yeah.
It's just... Anyway, I don't want to spend all night on the soapbox, especially since, God, I hope I'm preaching to the choir to anybody listening to this. Like, I feel like anybody who's listening to this show...
You never know, Stalin might write it.
No, he's dead.
Dear Principal Superintendent, Ava Braun here
again.
He's
dead, but I had a conversation with Ava Braun earlier this week.
It was not actually Ava Braun. It was a name I picked out of a hat.
Random.
The joke.
Randomly
end
picked
the episode.
Out. Wow.
She didn't say to end the episode.
Man,
did she? Wait,
I'm jacked up now, man. I can't just cold
he's
out.
He's gonna put his fist through the wall.
Well, we also have. He's gonna go bloody his fist on a wall.
I'll show you.
We didn't ask for feedback. We should ask for feedback about the whole big picture, small picture.
Oh, yeah. Do you have a preference? Because right. That was really the gist of the question. Was like, what do you like to read? Is right. there one that you prefer over the other?
Also. What do you think about Ava Braun? Do you think she should shoot herself? I kind of do.
Weigh in on this very topical matter.
Well, no, I mean, there is, I guess, you know, are there people who listen to this show who think that it's okay?
Who support Ava Braun?
Nobody who I brought to this thing. They don't know what they're getting into.
Who think it's okay to remove a book because you don't like it? I think that...
Like, we just say we're all just like...
I had this conversation with a couple people this week, and I think that if you send your child to a religious school...
Okay.
And a book comes home from a library that disagrees with your religious standpoint...
Uh-huh.
You have standing... I don't want to say the right, but you have standing right. to ask the library to remove it.
But you also run into tricky stuff when it's a private school like that. Like, the private school can basically tell you to fuck off.
Yeah.
Can a public school tell you to fuck off?
Well, they don't have as much wiggle room to, is my point. Like, a private school can kind of be like, if you don't like the way that we conduct our business, you can get out. Like, they have the full ability to do that. A public school doesn't always have... Like, not that public schools should, therefore... You know, cater to these
right, but they
dumb
can't
shit
they
wins,
can't
but they have to entertain
flat out,
them to a
right,
degree
to a degree yeah they have to pull they're political they're political right
you gotta be Braun.
Zana Braun that's wrong for lots of reasons. First of all, I think Ava Braun was blonde. Second of all, Zane's like 4'2" and Ava Braun was at least 4'6".
All right.
All right.
Done.
Third of all,
that's it. Have a good week. We'll talk more next week.